Please give a warm welcome to Speedy and Scooty.
Moin. Schön mal das erste Mal für uns in Person hier zu sein. Wir hatten das Privileg, schon mal bei der Remotecast Experience dabei sein zu dürfen vor 3 Jahren. Und dieser Talk, I will switch to English in a second, wird nahtlos an unseren letzten Talk anschließen, aber wir werden auch noch kurz zusammenfassen, was wir beim letzten Mal besprochen haben. So, I am Speedy. You can also call me Anton. This over here is Scooty. He is currently in Shanghai, so this is where you see him, Wizard of Oz style. We will start our talk by defining the word micromobility, because not for everyone this term is sort of the means the same things. For us, when we talk about micromobility, we mean mainly individual mobility, electric mobility, shared and dockless mobility. So basically this. And to us, this is micromobility in its current most sort of famous form. And those are a few pictures of the first couple of days of micromobility in Europe. And I think the way we got introduced to this topic, for a lot of us, this was the first sort of introduction into micromobility, and very soon this sort of thing happened, and misuse and vandalism happened. And for us, our background, why we initially started to even consider making art about it or researching this, was that we, as sort of tech enthusiasts, were very stunned that someone had the idea to just like drop 15,000 scooters, 15,000 sort of high-tech devices on the streets overnight. And naturally, we just took it apart at first and looked what's inside and how does it work. And from this, we sort of started OpenCoil, which is the name of what became our research program, let's call it that. And yeah, maybe Dennis can tell you more.
Hi, welcome everyone. I hope you can hear me. I hope the connection will stay stable. I'm a bit far away. It's super nice to be here. It's a shame I cannot see you all. Like Anton explained, this so-called micro-mobility revolution, as claimed by the companies that brought these bikes, basically happened overnight. So this first wave, mainly consisting of bicycles, just appeared overnight, really dropped at midnight on the streets. And without consent of any government institution, basically using a loophole, claiming public space to make money. So indeed, like what Anton said, like, what is this technology? Like, how is it possible to dump these high-tech electrical devices with batteries and all kinds of connectivity on the street, you know, on public space? Basically, we wanted to see how it works. Most other people's reactions were basically either breaking them or throwing them in the river, and we were looking for something more or less destructive and more creative. We were starting to look at ways in, and this is how OpenCoil started, from basically looking at what kind of interfaces, what kind of ports, what kind of labels are there on the scooters that can give us some knowledge of how these things actually work. Anton?
So very very early on we realized, okay, so some of those scooters have this wireless Qi charging pad that is actually meant to sort of make this more interesting to users than maybe the other brands, because in the beginning this brand, this was sort of unique to them, and riders could like charge their phones with it whilst riding and so on and so forth. And we realized, oh, okay, so this, there are some scooters that will give you free electricity all the time, not only if you ride with them. So this was sort of the first input we found by observing the scooters in the cityscape, and quickly we came up with this little first prototype. We took sort of an add-on wireless Qi package that you could add to phones that didn't have wireless charging, and we took out the coil, we hooked it up to an ESP8266, and just like designed a small PCB, and then we tried to hide it on the scooter because we wanted it to stay there for a bit. So we created these plastic shells, we molded this and we created the plastic shell, and in the end this is what became our first sort of intervention into micromobility space. We called it the Open Coil Parasitic Gallery, because our first public intervention, maybe some of you saw our last talk, was the Open Coil Speed Show that we realized at the end of 2020 in Berlin. It was basically a week of an art show hosted on micromobility and hosted by the micromobility network. We used our little parasitic adapter to power our ESPs. On the ESP there was a little Wi-Fi portal and a web server running, and we invited 11 artists to create a little piece of artwork that could be hosted on our device. And then the second thing we did is the second in way into micromobility we found was their API. So we tried to recreate how their app displays the available scooters to its users. And so we used a software called Burpsuit to sort of sniff all the traffic that our phone would send to the servers when we requested the location of the scooters around us. And we recreated those signals to create our own little app or map to only display the 11 scooters that were part of our little offline online show. And yeah, as we said, it happened 2020, end of 2020, for a week in Berlin. And if you want to know more about it, we have another talk online. But maybe today we get a little bit more into detail as how exactly we used the API, because in our future work after this first intervention, this became sort of more and more relevant.
Shall I talk a bit about the regular operation of the API? So in normal operation, you download the application of the sharing company, you install the application, and you register an account with your phone number, and you are able to view the map of all available vehicles in your area. Sometimes you don't even need to register an account, and basically the API key is stored in this app. Sometimes the API key is stored somewhere else. For example, by searching the internet using search engines. This way we found an API key used in a hackathon. We also decompiled some official apps and also used Burpsuit to sniff API keys from so-called super apps. These are apps that like combine multiple sharing providers together. So in order to follow our 11 scooters, we basically had to find an API key and the endpoint, which to request where our scooter is and what its status is. Luckily, all these endpoints are actually documented in this excellent Git Wobike, and also in the official tier documentation. So all we had to do was basically use an API key we found on a search engine and an endpoint we found in the official documentation. And this way, we could just use curl to return all the locations of our 11 scooters. And the nice thing of this was that this key was not rate limited at all. We could just basically real time follow our scooters and create a map for people to find the individual artworks.
And through this approach, we basically realized very quickly, oh, we just now, through this little, what was thought to be an artistic experiment, became a scooter company ourselves, and we suddenly had the same problems as the scooter companies, because very quickly, we were up all night, like, looking at the status of our scooters, trying to take care of them, and we quickly realized, oh, they also get, like, broken and trashed and thrown into the river. And within a week or so, I think a third of the 11 scooters we initially had modified had to go get repairs done. And this is also how we first found our first sort of warehouse. We thought, oh, some drunk person drove a scooter very far outside of Berlin overnight. But when we actually went there to bring it back home, we found a warehouse full of thousands of scooters that were there to get repair and to get service. And this is sort of the first takeaway we had from the Berlin show, is that, okay, we, on a very small scale, can experience the issues that a larger micromobility operator can have. And also, we can sort of get a peek behind this sort of curtain of micromobility, the side that usually is not shown. Usually micromobility, if we look at it at all, is going to be this, like on the streets, the only thing that's going to be visible usually is this. But through our artistic approach and through just the commitment to sort of take care of our little flock, we found out everything about the gig economy that this industry heavily relies on. Only a very small percentage of the people who are sort of taking care of this infrastructure are actually company workers or and just most of the work that is done to keep it up and running is done by third-party gig economy workers. In the beginning, they were called juicers. Those were the people who, like, at night drove vans around the city, throwing the scooters in, driving them to large warehouses where they would get charged, and maybe they would burn down the warehouse and because they didn't take care of their outlets and so on and so forth. So those were sort of the first observations that we were able to make through the first intervention. And this is also basically where we left off after our first talk at RC3 3 years ago. After this experience, we knew, okay, the next step is to open up this research project, to actually make it a research project, to allow other people and other creative people to maybe come up with new ways to interact with a scooter, to find new ins and outs and try to establish a better way of communicating with the micromobility infrastructure, because we still aren't very interested in the operators, but more how it all works and trying to establish some way of communicating here. So what we did is we held a few workshops. One of them was in Brussels. As I said, we basically wanted to create more of those parasites, more small little things that could be attached to a scooter. At first, we came up, well, we presented them our first sort of intervention and taking the power, and luckily in Brussels, the situation was the same. There were actually multiple scooter companies that had open coils, so scooters that would hand out free electricity. We quickly came up with new ways of sort of interfering, and we hijacked, we tried to sort of block GPS and LTE coverage. We actually used an Osmocom microcontroller to try to see if there's any relevant information being transferred via GSM, or if we can do like something like a man-in-the-middle attack to actually learn how a scooter would talk to the server, and if we can learn how to be a scooter for their network and maybe create ghost scooters or things like that. Just learn the language and see where this would lead us. One of the things that we were happy that we managed to do in Brussels, because Dennis briefly said the API key that we used for the first intervention was very limited in what it could do. Basically, it just allowed us to ask for the locations of different scooters. But since it was an API key used in one of those super apps, it was cool, it didn't have any data rates, we could use it, like basically spam it all day long, but it wouldn't allow us to unlock a scooter or to make it flash and ring, and this was something that we really wanted to do. So we again turned to Burpsuit and sort of tried to sniff how our phone would do it when we used the official operator app and press the ring button, how would this work? And we found out, okay, it's a bit more complicated here. You have your individual account's API key, and then this will be used to generate a bearer token that is only valid for maybe 60 minutes, but not forever. And we used this to, we wrote a little script. We first took a bunch of SIMs that were sort of clean, and we could create multiple accounts so that we would get around the rate limit for these requests that our personal API keys had. So we bundled a bunch of accounts and we created this little script that would request the bearer and then send the ringing request. And this way we created a little script that allowed us to basically ring all the scooters in close vicinity to one god scooter that we marked in the script. And this little thing, this little experience was fantastic because you could take this god scooter and you could ride it around Brussels and the sound of micromobility would haunt you. It was fantastic. It was this insane experience of this network and infrastructure that, as I said, usually is not really meant to be so visible or is only seen as those scooters that are always lying around on the floor and all this. Here you can see a couple of other pictures. For example, we of course found more warehouses. We also realized, those warehouses, other than the ones in Berlin, they are actually in residential areas, and the kids, they are totally aware of it, and they use it as their playground because there are too many scooters to fit in the warehouse. So even at night, many of the scooters are bundled outside, and they would from time to time blink or beep or whatever, and the kids just loved it. Another thing we found out through these observing techniques is scooters get rebranded all the time because the market is super fluctuating, and many smaller companies get bought by bigger companies or they get taken over, and so a lot of the scooters are actually not properly painted. They just have this sticker around them to like make them the new brand, and the original brand logo in like the rubber parts is just like sanded out. So it's very ghetto. The whole micromobility industry is not everything. Just screams sort of quick and dirty and. The main thing we found is the main goal is just get bigger as fast as possible to either sort of get bought for a good price or become the one that in the end is market dominant and therefore can maybe at some point become a profitable company. This picture here is a really nice hack because we found later versions of the micromobility app because they were always parked wrongly, the scooters. So they implemented this little thing where you had to take a picture of your parking spot to make sure it's parked properly. And we were wondering who checks this and can we maybe get into contact directly with these people who check it by misparking them and then putting also with the photo we take a sign to get in contact with us. Sadly, no one ever got in contact with us. This is, by the way, also totally fine. It's parked here. No one. It worked. I'm not charged for this. It lives here now. Maybe Dennis can take sum up those a bit more the takeaways.
Thank you, Anton. Another thing that we tried was to actually repurpose the microcontrollers inside of scooters of companies that went bankrupt, and the scooters were just left to rot on the sidewalk, basically. If you can find the data sheet for the microcontroller, it's rather trivial to just reflash it with your own code. And this is, for example, just a blinky example using an existing LED on the PCB already. Another thing we notice is that scooters actually migrate, and this can be illustrated by actually the scooters we used in 2020 in Berlin. Today they're actually in Hamburg. Four of them, you can find them in the city center of Hamburg. Ask Anton if you want to go on a tour to find them and see if
our parasite is still attached. Which is something an experience we already made in Berlin. The one of the scooters that was taken to the warehouse actually was repaired and put back on the street, and it still had our little parasite on it. So we hid it properly, and it was still functioning. And we were super stoked about it. To sort of move, as we said, through this observation, one thing became very apparent, that they are sort of hiding a lot of a big chunk of what actually is micromobility is sort of behind the curtain and hidden away from us and from the users, and the sort of big,
it's often hidden away behind like cute branding, cute animations.
This is a little unlock simulation of a Chinese bike sharing bike manufacturer, and as you all know, the main thing with these companies is greenwashing. This is the micromobility revolution. Is also a green mobility revolution. Every fucking scooter has it written on it. Your ride is climate neutral. So we looked at the data. As we said, we previously encountered the high rate of vandalism that those scooters appear. We also realized this marketing climate neutrality is something that's not sort of just in the micromobility or in the startup space. Basically, every bigger company is doing it because it apparently sells. This little picture is what we call first wave micromobility. This is a bike graveyard. Maybe some of you have already seen pictures like these. When we say first wave micromobility, those are the non-electric sharing bikes that were implemented mostly by Chinese companies from maybe 2017 to 2019. Some of them are still on the street. I think I'm sure somewhere in Hamburg there are still a few mobikes, but the app is gone, the company is gone, you cannot use them anymore. And most of them land here on these sort of graveyards. And
this not only happens in China, you know, it also happens here in Europe. This is a picture of a graveyard in near Rotterdam, in Berkel Rode Reis. And here the company actually tried to collect some of the bikes through like a partner called Fox Global. And what's interesting is that they also use this sort of shipping company to bring them to the harbor of Rotterdam and distribute them through Europe.
Another story that we can now tell is Cologne a few years back, or actually like 2 years back. There was a little outrage for like 2 weeks in the newspaper because one of the operators actually contacted a diving company and asked for a price to get some of their scooters out of the Rhine as some like a marketing stunt. They wanted to release pictures of them cleaning up the Rhine River. And it backfired because it was too expensive. So they pulled out, but it sort of still became public knowledge that there are like 500 scooters just underneath one bridge in Cologne alone. So for like 2 weeks, every newspaper outlet would write stories about it. And the right picture here is German newspaper TV show and a little snippet of where they pulled out two scooters for the camera from the Rhine River. And I actually recreated this little scene in a gallery because I believe it's very, in this gallery you can read the signage on the scooter and bring it in context with the reality. Someone's looking for this. And in the end, the sad truth is the city of Cologne went to court and asked the companies to be sort of forced to take care of this issue, and they lost. The court ruled the riverbed is city property, therefore the city is in charge of cleaning it up. Doesn't matter what's in there or not. So the scooter companies didn't even have to clean it up in the end.
What are we gonna do about this, right? So here's a picture of the European Commissioner Nelly Kroes and the former Prime Minister of the Netherlands with the lobbyist of Uber. You can read about this if you search for the Uber files. Basically, Uber tried to influence, to get market share in Europe and to get around certain laws.
As I think they proved previously with when they established their taxi thing, though it was the same sort of trying to force lawmakers to play with their rules. Anyway, we realized those sort of strategies of artistic observation, trying to find creative ways to both visualize and or make visible the infrastructure are very, very effective, and you can immediately sort of find clues in every city if you know where to look. And this inspired our second large intervention. This was this year at FMR 23 in Linz. We were invited there to do a performance piece, and this is our little safari lodge. As you can see, the backdrop is a very nice power plant, and we again used basically the same technology as the first time, so a little coil, induction coil, an ESP, and a web server. But this time we didn't host an art piece or an art show. We hosted a little interactive map of Linz with a curated map of certain spots that you could visit physically in Linz and see a different side than just scooters. Basically everything that's not a scooter but still sort of has something to do with micromobility, we try to put it on this map. As you can see, there are rivers also, because a lot of micromobility can be found in the rivers. The power plant was on there, and also we learned that by looking at just the GPS locations of the scooters and the statuses they had in the response that the server sent back, we found some anomalies in the city where there is a cluster of broken scooters or seemingly broken scooters. And usually for us this meant, okay, this must be a warehouse, this must be where they repair it. So we went there, we wanted to take pictures of the warehouse, but it was in the middle of downtown Linz and there were no scooters around. But there was a concrete, underground pathway. And we realized when you drive through this pathway and try to end the ride somewhere there, there is a small chance this will glitch out the connection between, not between your phone and the server, but between the server and the scooter. So your end, you will be able to end your ride, you will be able to not be charged anymore, but the scooter will still run and you could still drive it away. It's basically a liberated scooter at that point. But the GPS information that's sort of on the server is still the location where you tried to end the ride. So this is why we called it the Bermuda Triangle of Linz, because there were thousands of ghost scooters that were not there anymore, but were sort of liberated and someone just drove it off. And we actually witnessed multiple people who didn't seem to care about having rented this. So they were just chilling and not even using it, but it was unlocked. So we are sure that other people also found out. And we actually witnessed kids in this area going from scooter to scooter to scooter, trying if it would run. So it's a nice observation to see that it's not just us sort of trying to see it, but it's also very natural observation by kids in the area. Oh, okay, there are these nice toys on the street, and sometimes they are free to use. And this is just another takeaway that we took from this safari in Linz.
Yeah, so we visited various locations, for example, that are connected to micromobility, but often overlooked. So, of course, these so-called green mobility scooters, they need to get their energy from somewhere. And we were conveniently located next to the power plant that provides energy for the whole of Linz. And they burn basically trash and piles of wood, as you can see on the picture on the left. And we took people on a tour throughout all these locations we spotted. Linz is also a hub in the Belt and Road or the New Silk Road Initiative, which is kind of interesting. Like, how did the scooters end up? How did they get to Linz? Of course, we visit the pièce de résistance, the warehouse at the end of the tour. Maybe you can guess where it is by looking at a map of our like preliminary research.
Black is dead, just as a little tip.
Yeah, what's interesting was that the warehouse in Linz, just like the one basically in Berlin, seemed to be, yeah, just an empty, like temporary space. In Linz, all the doors were open 24/7. You could just go inside and drive around. It was the old Nestle factory, and it's basically in a sort of transition phase, I believe. They want to transform it to a cultural space, but I'm not sure if that's still gonna happen. But meanwhile, these companies have to stay flexible. They have to be able to react quickly to the market. So they rent temporary spaces, basically squatting spaces in the city.
Which they actually needed to react very quickly as a result or as a direct reaction to what we did to their scooters. This time we actually left our little modifications on the scooters because we were hoping the show would go on even after the festival had ended. And maybe a month later or so, we received an email by the festival organizer that apparently some tier user found our little modification, thought it was spyware, went to the police, and it escalated completely. And tier, in the end, had to pull all of their scooters from whole Linz to their warehouse, and someone had to check whether it's actually spyware or not. And if you go to Linz and it's not their new fancy model anymore that you can ride, we're sorry, this is our fault. They now have to use the shitty old models again. To sort of transition to the next sort of location of our research, as I said, people are adapting more and more to micromobility, people and nature. The picture here is a sunken scooter, and nature is healing, nature is also adopting or hijacking or misusing micromobility. The right one is a picture of a bird's nest in an antenna. More people than just Dennis and I have realized, maybe if we don't use those things and we still have to live with them in the same public space, maybe we get creative and use it for good. Those are a couple of pictures of Shanghai where restaurant owners with limited kitchen capacity would just use the bikes as drying racks for their dishes. We have pictures of the police in China using bikes as sort of fencing for corona testing facilities, and it's really nice to see that more and more people get creative with what has been put in their sort of public space. And we also see more and more micromobility influence sort of other culture. It hasn't been the last time, it's not just us anymore who do art shows that include micromobility. This is, I think, a picture of a gallery. They just put out a couple of scooters there, and there are even other sculptures that react to micromobility. And with all these like new tools to observe and to also interpret the data that the micromobility industry keeps pushing, we went to Paris. Why Paris? Well, Paris is, for one of the largest cities in Europe, one of the first cities in Europe that allowed micromobility operators to operate on their streets way before Germany. Also one of the ones that were hit the hardest. I think at peak micromobility, there were over 20,000 scooters in Paris, and they were met with the same sort of vandalism as anywhere else. And at first, the city of Paris tried to put more rules on how the operators could operate, and the operators would then try to find new loopholes to not really abide those laws. And it was a back and forth from 2018 when they first arrived to this year, when in April, 2nd of April of this year, the city of Paris had a public vote on whether or not to keep scooters specifically in the city of Paris. And maybe some of you know how this turned out. 90% of the people who voted, which is just 10% of people who were allowed to vote, but nevertheless, 90% of the people voted against the scooters, and the scooter operators lost their operating license at the end of August of this year. So we went there for half a year, and we wanted to look at the sort of definition of a revolution, because as we told you in the beginning, the term that the micromobility industry themselves used to sort of put out the word of what they were about to do to our cities was a revolution. And I think the people of France, and specifically the people of Paris, might have a different definition of what a revolution is still today. Basically around the same time where they held this public vote on whether or not to keep scooters, they also voted on the entrance age for retirement, and this is what happened to Paris. I went there to take pictures of micromobility, of the micromobility revolution, and as you can see, I accidentally took pictures of a totally different revolution happening in the background, and micromobility playing its part. And this was not a one-day experience. It went on for like weeks. And I have thousands of pictures like this. And for me, it was really interesting on these pictures to see both definitions of this term revolution: the uprising of oppressed people, as well as technology, innovation, and yeah, maybe in the end, the people of Paris actually won the revolution against micromobility, because now they are not there anymore. So also we thought, because we found, we used our previous knowledge about how the API works, and we created a little map of sort of the dead scooters. And I collected the data of the scooters for the past 3 months. And if you look at a map of Paris and the locations of those scooters today, then you will see there are still hundreds of scooters in the city of Paris. And today, so to this day, and they all, if you click on the status, they all have the status lost. So all of those scooters sort of became the victims of the micromobility revolution. They are nowhere to be found. The operators claim that they pushed most of the scooters into other service areas, but their GPS data shows they are basically by the thousands in two warehouses next to Paris. And the 15,000 scooters that were in Paris, they have been swapped out by bikes. So it's not really micromobility that Paris got rid of, it's just bike scooters. Well. Basically, to wrap this up, over the past 3 or basically 4 years now, we've held interventions, workshops, discussions, and tried to make people aware of the bigger picture of micromobility and try to see how they would react to it. And it was so nice to see that the feedback has always been, now that we like saw some work of yours or heard you talk about micromobility, we cannot unsee or we notice micromobility differently now, and some take better care, maybe pick them up when they're in the dirt, but some also try to sort of inform themselves as to or how they could maybe force regional government to act on it, because as you can see in Paris, it is possible to at least somewhat have an impact on how micromobility is sort of being treated in your city. Maybe Dennis has also something to say.
Yeah, exactly. So in order to like convey our story, this sort of technique of counter mapping, of creating a map, like an inverse map of the existing app, is like an invaluable tool for us to tell this story. It immediately allows you to see where there are broken scooters, basically. And this way you can find graveyards, you can find workshops, you can find out a lot about like the hidden infrastructure behind these companies. Now, for example, all the bikes have been replaced by all the scooters have been replaced by bikes. It sort of indicates that it has nothing to do with whether it's a bike or a scooter or
a stroller.
As you can see in this picture, a baby stroller. It's just about money. It's about investing in public space, but investing in market share. New buzzwords keep coming up. And new loopholes are you know, being exploited in order to make profit. So for the future, we found some interesting models. Of course, AI will be a buzzword you will see a lot.
And even in their market video, they call it AI driven. And then in the video, you see it's actually remotely operated. It's really just a Google search for what does my company need for to be successful, and they will implement it in their market strategy. And now it's AI and self-driving, and they have cameras to map the streets and all of this, but maybe at least they won't claim they are carbon neutral anymore, who knows. Maybe this gets old for them. And we believe that a key reason for why they operate this way is that in sort of the startup world, there are basically only two exit strategies. There's either get bought or become the one who's sort of ruling them all, become the one who's market dominant. And this, of course, forces companies to not always act ecologically, even if it's the thing that they have written biggest on their flags. But it also shows, as for example Paris and there are other cities, smaller cities that have reacted on it, that we can still sort of have a say in it, and it's not set in stone. It will always keep changing, and loopholes can be closed. They will find new loopholes, but maybe we can push it into a direction where it's actually going to become something that is valuable to the public and not just valuable to, I don't know, a few investors, maybe, if it all goes well. Thank you all for listening. We will now have time to take some questions, but also we want to let you know that we are planning a little hands-on demo of this open coil hardware that we created to do most of our shows. So maybe keep a look in the self-organized events part of the CCC, and you will find it. It's probably going to happen on the 29th, so keep an eye out for this if you want to test it yourself, maybe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So who wanted the scooter? It's available now. So we have any questions, please line up to the microphones. We start with microphone 2, please.
Hello. Thanks for the talk. There was a lot of criticism in the early days that scooters basically break after a short while. But you have some actual data on that, right? So you have the 11 scooters that you initially upfitted. How many of those are still available? I mean, two, definitely in Hamburg.
Three. It's a great question and something that we found out actually, just as you said, by looking at our own scooters. They do actually get repaired as long as they aren't haven't been thrown in a river and their batteries have leaked and whatever or not. All these scooters that were in the warehouse will have probably been repaired at some point and then put back out on the street. We can also see that while in cities like Berlin, where Tier has their headquarters, there will be new models and new hardware on the street every couple of months, but the old hardware might migrate to other locations. For example, the old scooters in Berlin are now in Hamburg. So this at least is some sort of positive thing we could read out of the data, that they do not throw them away immediately, but this is also due to their learnings that they have to improve their hardware. This is not the latest, but one of the improved versions of the scooter that we used in Berlin, and it has like better protection around the battery. You maybe noticed this yourself if you have noticed micromobility very early on. The scooters have become beefier and heavier, and they not only become more feature-rich, but also more sort of stable and maybe harder to destroy. And so maybe this answers the question.
Okay, yeah, I think they're quite stable. I reversed one myself, so I can tell it's quite good. Microphone number 3, please.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. I noticed that when you use the Tier app, you can't ping scooters that are too far away, but if you then reserve the scooter, you can ping it from further away.
Yeah.
But anyway, so my question is, if you have scooters and you can have, apparently you have unique IDs for every scooter, have you looked into extracting movement patterns and perhaps also checking whether you can reconstruct which people did the routes? Because I smell some privacy nightmare here.
It's actually funny, if I can say something shortly. One of the apps we checked out in Brussels, I think it was it the Pony one?
Mm-hmm.
You could actually see actively rented scooters. So we were just looking outside of the window and checking the app, and we could actually see people passing by.
So we naturally wanted to find out how the app does that. The answer is it's a URL. It's not protected, no API keys, no nothing. You have to know the URL. You type it in your browser, and you will get live JSON data straight from the URL of all scooters, not only the ones available, but also the ones that are currently being used. As far as we could see, there is no easy way to link it to like private data, as like the names of accounts and stuff like that. But also we didn't try very hard because this is not what we wanted to do, but I feel the same.
Thank you.
Okay, we got microphone number 1 with the easel.
In touch. Hello, hello. Well, thank you for the nice talk. It was really good. One thing I noticed in my own research is that Tier is one of the companies that is getting their scooters from Okai, the Chinese company.
Yes.
And it's just one of like five or six companies in Europe alone that they don't only get the scooters, but they also get, as far as I know, a white label app for iOS and Android, and they just change the logo.
Correct.
And Okai, the Chinese company, is taking care of fleet management, tracking, also payment processing in parts. Mm-hmm. And so they have like a scooter startup as a service. And the job of Tier and the other companies is to find venture capital and to play along in this game of being the last, you know, the last company to be on the market, or bank board. And Okai is like one of the three manufacturers in China that provide the world market. There's also two others, but this
Ninebot, Segway, for now.
Exactly, and JD. but that's about it. So there's very limited people who actually build these, and there's companies that use the services from another company that provides the actual business application, and that's a remarkable aspect of this, that the whole gig economy, you know, this is really weird. It's really weird. If you think about it,
It makes apparent two things very, very clearly. One, this is not the product of Tier. This is not what they are selling. This is just the thing that they are currently most, I don't know, hyped about, or the thing that they can sell the best or something. But this is, as you said, there are like three companies in China that manufacture these, and the companies can basically say, okay, I want this in green color, which is a very favorite company color of these micromobility industries is a shade of this, and also that the takeaway is just I think you understood it.
Okay,
very well.
So we're running out of time, so I think thank you very much again for this nice talk.